Welcome to the South Elkhorn Christian Church Sermon Podcast. We hope you enjoy the weekly messages. For bulletin material, reflection guides, and other resources, visit southelkhorncc.org.
Well, there won't be any theatrical pyrotechnics for this sermon, though that was awesome. Thank you, Pastor Holly. Thank you to our media team as well. I hope you felt that. I hope it spoke to your heart and soul this morning. If you get nothing else from this story, I hope you get that message of Jesus climbing into the boat with Peter and saying, I got you. I'm here. I'm always with you. In fact, this morning, I'm going to invite you perhaps to consider maybe a different interpretation of this story than you might have heard before. I'm going to invite you to do so by proving to your neighbor this morning that indeed you did brush your teeth. So smile at your neighbor this morning and let them know, stay in the boat. Let them know this morning, stay in the boat. Perhaps this story is not about the intrepid, risk-taking faith of Peter to get out of the boat and step on the water. Perhaps this story is about something else. And maybe it's okay. Maybe even good and right. Stay in the boat. Well, let's turn to our story this morning, and by way of reminder about where we are and what's going on, during this Lenten season, we are exploring the faith of the disciple Peter. We're pairing together lyrics from this hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, pairing it with a story in the life of Peter as we learn about what it means to figure out faith, because Peter is figuring out his faith. And I suspect, the purpose of this sermon series is not to cleverly put together a song and some stories, but for us to see ourselves in the story of Peter, in the faith of Peter, as he is figuring out what his faith means. What does it mean to follow in the way of Jesus? What does it mean to trust God as experienced in the person of Christ? And perhaps through his trials and errors, through his mistakes and mishaps, through his incredible achievements and the healing and insight that he experiences, perhaps we can see our own faith unfolding. Perhaps there's something for us to learn as we accompany Peter on this Lenten journey, figuring out faith and what it means to follow in the way of Christ. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 14. We're going to be reading the scriptural version of what was so incredibly portrayed for us here on stage. We're going to be reading verses 22 through 33. And to set this up, Pastor Holly mentioned this in the children's sermon, but I'm going to go back just one more story before that. At the beginning of chapter 14, Jesus is told by his disciples that the one who baptized him, perhaps his mentor and friend, had been killed, had been murdered by King Herod. And so attempting to withdraw to a deserted place, perhaps to process his grief, to get away and be alone and pray with God, before he can do so, a crowd that had been following him continues to press in on him, and instead of turning the crowd away, embraces the crowd, continues teaching, preaching, healing, and even when they are hungry, feeding them before finally dismissing them. And as the crowd disperses, Jesus does something that's important for us to know we can do too. Jesus tells his closest friends and his disciples, get out of here. I need to be alone. So he sends them away as he goes up to a mountain to pray. Let's read together this story. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. Note this, by himself to pray. When evening came, if you missed it the first time, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. They were headed to the other side of the sea, and a raging wind had them stuck in place. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, have courage. It is I," or more literally, "I am. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Well, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And so Jesus said, "Okay, come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, the one that had kept them stuck in place, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, rescue me, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You have little faith. Why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The word of God for the people of God. It's a ghost! I've heard those words before. I vividly remember as I lined up my children and I said, "Which one of you used the toilet and didn't flush?" And my middle child said, "It was a ghost!" I vividly remember as I saw the green beans dumped into the trash can and I asked my children, "I just stepped out for 1 second, who didn't eat their green beans and threw them away? It's a ghost! Who didn't put their shoes away? It's a ghost! They took them! It's a ghost! It's amazing how convenient the ghost is when we have to face our consequences." Well, the disciples, "It's a ghost! It's a ghost!" There they are, stuck at sea, the wind raging all around them, the sea becoming this chaotic signal of destruction and death, and all they can do in this moment is see the very worst, their greatest, deepest fears projected onto a symbol of their own death and destruction. It couldn't get any worse than this. I mean, there is a ghost. It's a ghost. And yet it wasn't a ghost. It's amazing how fear can so grip us, can so constrain us, can so keep us so stuck that we can't see anything else except what our fear might have us believe or see. And yet something else, something more was going on in that moment. At the beginning of the story, Jesus sends the disciples away, and it's important to know that we all need time away. We all need time alone. Jesus himself took time away and took time alone and needed to process perhaps his own grief, perhaps his own exhaustion from tending to and nurturing and feeding and healing and ministering to the crowds, the throngs of people that were pressing in on him. Maybe he just needed some time to be in the quiet. Importantly, he went up a mountain to pray and connect with God, to recharge his spirit, to process his grief. Mountains are important in the Gospels, especially in Matthew's Gospel. They signal to us, they help us remember, remind us of stories of mountains in the people of God's past. Remember that it was Moses who went up on a mountain to commune with God, to receive the teaching, the wisdom of God on Mount Sinai, to experience the presence of God so much so that one story is that Moses' own face was radiating, reflecting the divine presence. There was a glow about him. Also remember, it was Moses who first met God on a mountain, a burning bush that burst into flame and commissioned Moses to go confront an authoritarian tyrant who wanted only to exploit and demean the people of God, who wanted to take advantage of the vulnerable for his own greedy, controlling empire. And it was there Moses asked, "God, when I'm asked who it is that sent me, who it is that is behind all of this, who shall I tell them? What is your name?" And the voice from the burning bush says, "I am that I am." Or translated differently, "I will be who I will be. I was who I am. I will be what I was. I was who I will always be. I am that I am." This beautiful, wide open infinitive, "I am. When we hear the words I am in Scripture, we're meant to remember the mountain, the moment, the presence of God, the liberating, freeing, rescuing presence of God that pays attention to suffering and chaos and hurt. And so Jesus ascends a mountain, takes some time away, and perhaps is so intimately connected to God that there's a radiance about him, one that is strange and different, so much so that perhaps maybe as he walks towards the disciples, stuck on the sea, that he seems like nothing he's been before. It's got to be a ghost. But whether Jesus was recognizable or not, perhaps you know what it's like to be so consumed by your own fear that you can't see anything else. Perhaps you know what it's like to be so stuck in a situation that you can't see anything else. It's got to be a ghost. That's all it could be. It couldn't get any worse. There it is. There's our symbol. We're not going to make it. We're going down. The chaos around us is orchestrated for our demise. It's a ghost. But it wasn't a ghost. It wasn't a ghost. And what does Jesus say? Take heart. Or, as I like to translate it, have courage. It is I, quite literally in Greek, ego eimi, I am. Jesus, who has gone up the mountain to commune with God, where in mountains past, the I am had presented God's self to God's people there. Jesus, filled with God's presence, shares that presence, confers that presence, communicates that presence to those stuck in that moment. I am. Don't be afraid. Recently, I've been meeting, as I've shared before, and some of you know, everyone needs a pastor. Pastors need pastors. I've been meeting with my spiritual director and counselor, who's been encouraging me during the season of Lent to consider journaling in a particular kind of way, to journal my face, my fears, my anger, and in a moment of vulnerability, I'll say I can't remember what C is. It just came to me. Control. Fear, anger, control, and expectations. But if you want to get real about confronting the difficult stuff in life, part of it is learning to name the fears we all carry, the anger that ebbs and flows in intensity, the ways we want to control things, and our expectations about how things go. Because there's something about putting that down on paper, getting it out there, that we can actually look at it and go, huh, maybe I don't have so much to be afraid of. Maybe things don't quite have to go that way for them to be good or important or healing. There's something about fear that when it goes unarticulated, when it just lives within us, it can so creep into everything we see, perceive, and experience that it can lead us to thinking, it's just got to be a ghost. It can't be any different than this, to leading us to being stuck. Being stuck. If you're looking for a Lenten practice this season leading up to Easter, perhaps it's journaling. Perhaps it's learning to journal your face. Getting real about your fear, your anger, your control, your expectations, things that are true about all of us and that hit us in different seasons of life in different ways. And there the disciples were, afraid, thinking they had seen a ghost. And those words that are spoken time and time and time again in the Gospels, don't be afraid, are preceded this time by an invitation to take heart, to be real, to have courage. It is I. I am. God is here with you. Now, it's important to know that in the early church, boats were symbolic of the church. It's important to know that this story has some symbolic meaning, some symbolic invitation for us to understand that if we think about the early church, the early church who had perhaps traveled alongside and been with Jesus, the leaders who had, his disciples who had seen him crucified and then resurrected and then ascend and leave, are much like the disciples in that boat on the sea. They are no longer with Jesus in the same way. He has left them. He's apart from them. Did you see the great lengths the text went to let us know? They were alone, different, separated, apart. The disciples know what it is to feel apart from Jesus. The early church knew what it was to be apart from Jesus. And here is this message, that even when you feel apart from Jesus, God is with you. Even if it's hard to see, even if it's hard to believe and to feel, God is with you. I love Peter. I love Peter because I feel Peter. And there's this beautiful moment where the disciples are stuck in this wind and Christ appears and lets them know, hey, it's me. God is here. Don't be afraid. And Peter takes that as an invitation to do something grand. To prove himself, maybe? To make God prove God's self? To make Jesus prove himself? One way to interpret this scripture is that Peter shows us what it is to risk, to step out of the boat, to get onto the water and to trust Jesus and to do something new and different and bold. And I think there's something beautiful and important about that. There's ways in which we in our lives have to take a leap, do something different, trust that we're going to be okay. But I'm not sure that's the core meaning of this story. Jesus didn't tell the disciples to get out of the boat. No one was egging Peter to get out of the boat. And when Peter says what Peter says, he says it in a way that we've heard before. He says, if it is you. He wants to test Jesus. In fact, Jesus has been tested before in the wilderness by the evil one. If you are who you say you are, if God is who God is, then. If anything, this is an invitation for Peter to stay put and trust that in the midst of this, it's going to be okay. But Peter, because Peter is bold and Peter is brash and Peter is beset by who knows what, decides, no, this is a moment that I'm not sure it's not a ghost. I'm not sure what it is, but you're going to prove yourself and it's going to be spectacular for me. Tell me to come walk on the water. And Jesus says, all right, Peter, come. You obviously need to work this out. Step out onto the water. Now, if we keep in mind the symbolic power of this story, there's something important about the church staying together, about the church leaning into one another in the midst of difficulties. In fact, the early church, after Jesus' death, resurrection, and ascension, the early church was torn apart by division, by persecution from the outside world, by hostile environments, by disagreements, by the inability to welcome all people, by the poverty and the tremendous inequality of the Roman Empire. There were all these things that were tearing at the early church and that were like storms and raging seas that could keep them stuck where they were and not continue on their journey to the other side to continue the healing, saving, feeding, nurturing, life-giving work of Christ. And St. Paul and others would write to the early church and say, you got to learn how to love one another and stick together and trust one another and work through your differences and see the beauty and the face of God in one another. Because when you step out and try to do it on your own, you're going to sink and fall. And what does Peter do? Peter takes on that disposition that perhaps you know, perhaps I know. We're going to prove something. I have a hunch that anytime we want people to prove themselves or we want to prove ourselves, it's not going to end well. Prove your love for me by. Prove who you are by. Anytime we get into this proof mindset, this control mindset, this desire to have things go one way and to force people into our molds and expectations, the truth is it's probably not going to go the way we want and it might even be disastrous. And this story is not about proving our faith. In fact, the Christian life, our spirituality, should not be about proving ourselves before others or proving ourselves before God or demanding that God be proven. Proof, this idea of absolute certainty and control over ideas and the way, that will likely self-destruct and lead us to more heartache and turmoil and destructive patterns than we need to be in. And there's Peter in the boat. If it's really you, prove it. Make me walk on water. As if Jesus was like, sure, Peter, but that's not what this is all about. Sometimes there are things in our lives, though, that make it so that we do the brash, the rash, and the unthought, the reactive thing, and we find ourselves out in the middle of the raging wind and storm. Pastor Holly has been continuing to encourage me to watch The Chosen. So every time I bring it in, it's because it landed. And the beautiful story that was depicted in The Chosen is one in which Peter is actually going through a great loss in his life. He and his wife have had a miscarriage. And Peter is beset by grief and feeling abandoned by God. And so there's this moment when they're at sea and Christ shows up on the water and Peter's had enough and is like, I'm tired of you, Jesus, and I don't care anymore. And I just want to drown. Make me walk on water and I hope it doesn't work. And Jesus says, come. And so Peter steps out on the water and gets close enough to Jesus that when he does begin to sink, Jesus can reach out and grab him by the hand as he calls out and finally gives up all desire to prove anything or control anything and just says, save me. Rescue me. And Jesus does. Pulls him out of the water and they get in the boat together. And in this beautiful moment, Peter finally just breaks down in his grief and his heartache and says, don't let me go. And Jesus doesn't. Jesus tells Peter and Jesus tells the disciples, why so little faith? Why did you doubt? I want to be clear this morning. There is nothing wrong with intellectual curiosity. There's nothing wrong with careful and deliberate thought about our faith. There's nothing wrong with questioning the inherited beliefs that were given to us as children and that we need to make our own by questioning, wondering, investigating, discovering, and changing our minds and thinking something different. The purpose of this story is not to make it so we unquestioningly agree with whatever a pastor says or a doctrine says or a confession says. That's not what this kind of doubt and trust is all about. So I want you to know this morning, this story is not about demonizing those of us who enter into a life of faith with deep questions, who aren't sure that we are entirely in alignment with all the traditional creeds and doctrines that have been handed down over the generations. No, part of faith is figuring out what it means to be in relationship with God, what it means to be in relationship with each other, what it means to be living out God's love. And that is not something that a doctrine or a confession or a creed can build walls around. We are free to make sense of our faith together, to not be sure, to be in conversation and to grow and to learn and to change our minds. That's not what Jesus is talking about anyway when he says, why do you doubt? What he's saying is, why didn't you doubt I would be with you? Why did you feel like you needed to step out of the boat and prove anything? I'm right here. I'm always going to be right here. You may not always understand the metaphysical apparatus of God, but that's not what it's about. It's trusting that when you're stuck, that you're not alone. And there may still yet be more to the story. To be patient with the chaos and the wind and the rage and to know that I am with you and you can lean into those who are with you too. Stay in the boat. In fact, when I pull you out, I'm going to take you right back to the boat. This morning, I don't know what storms are raging in your life. We can see storms raging all around us and the culture wars, the division, the hate, the chaos that seems never to end and simply to perpetuate generation after generation after generation and can lead us feeling stuck and like there's nowhere we can go. And Christ walks out to us and says, stay in the boat and I am with you. And if in the event you're so beset by grief and pain and loss, and you can't help but demand things from God and from other people, and you just can't help but jump out of the boat, know that I will still be there. As soon as you're ready to open up your heart and say, please just rescue me, save me. I can't do this on my own. I want to know there's more to the story. The disciples eventually make it to the other side. The wind that raged against them and had them stuck, it subsided. It didn't subside the first time Jesus said, take heart, I am, don't be afraid. There's nothing about the Christian life or our work together as church that guarantees that there won't be raging winds that have us stuck. But the invitation of this story, the invitation for Peter, is to learn to trust that he is not alone, that he has nothing to prove. And even when he thinks he does, God will be there still. Because God doesn't have anything to prove. God has only one thing to give: unconditional, everlasting, life-transforming, world-changing, loving presence. The presence that is with us when we retreat onto a mountain. The presence that is with us when we are in the chaos of a storm. The presence that is with us when we make it to the other side and continue the important work we've been called to do. The presence that is with us when we demand things from God and from each other. The presence that never leaves us nor forsakes us. The real adventure of faith is learning to trust each step of the way that that is true. But that is true.
Thanks for listening to the message this week. Visit southelkhorncc.org. where you can download reflection and discussion guides to dig deeper into the weekly scripture and message.